Welcome back to Season 4 of Pathways by Grenadian STEAM, the podcast where we chat with West Indian professionals at home and in the diaspora who have worked in one or more of the fields of science, technology, engineering, architecture, or mathematics to understand what led them to choose the path they did, the successes, failures, and learnings they've had along the way, and in general, what careers are out there. This season, in addition to debuting full video episodes on YouTube and Spotify to help you feel more engaged, we will be including our members, both students and professionals, in the conversations, inviting them to share their own thoughts, ideas, and experiences on the topics brought up by our guests. This is in an effort to encourage and normalize discussions among people of all ages and levels within society. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy the journey on today's pathway. Our guest for today is Heather Pinnock. Heather is a Jamaican placemaker and champion of sustainable tropical living. She is a development professional with formal training in architecture, urban design, and project management, as well as over 23 years of experience in construction and real estate. She's a graduate of the Bartlett Development Planning Unit at University College London and the Caribbean School of Architecture at University of Technology, Jamaica. Heather has worked across Jamaica as well as in St. Lucia and Trinidad and Tobago. Her experience includes working with the Ministry of Water and Housing, the University of the West Indies, the United Nations Development Program Multi-Country Office in Jamaica, and the environmental nonprofit CaribSave, among others. In 2021, she concluded a successful stint leading one of the Government of Jamaica's largest implementation agencies, the Urban Development Corporation, where she championed the cause of making development happen sustainably. She was recently appointed co-chair of the Commonwealth Women in Planning Network. Heather is also a certified Scrum Master, an EarthCheck Design accredited professional, and a licensed realtor associate in Jamaica. Since leaving the public sector, she launched Lucy Caribbean, a company with a focus on sustainable development and conscious living for tropical regions to further her work for an equitable and resilient future. Welcome to Pathways, Heather.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
How are you doing today?
I'm very good, thanks.
Great. So as you know, we're going to get started to give the audience a bit of a background on who you are with a few quick questions to give the backstory, and then we'll dive more into your career.
Okay.
So tell us first, where exactly did you grow up?
I grew up in Kingston, Jamaica. Moved around in Kingston, Jamaica, but lived primarily in Kingston for a few years, maybe 5 or 6 years. I lived in Birmingham in England while my dad was doing some PhD studies. Okay. I lived in Birmingham with my family for a bit, but I did come back to Jamaica to start high school. And I was in Jamaica thereafter.
Got it. And so speaking of schools, can you list for us every school that you've attended?
That's an interesting question, as if I would remember. Okay, so I don't remember what school I went to in England. I really don't.
Okay.
But I went to Wilma's Prep School here in Jamaica. My mother was vice principal of Wilma's Girls High School, so it was close by. It was a neighboring school. So mm-hmm. I went to Wilma's Girls Prep School. Then I went to Immaculate Conception High School, which is a Catholic all-girls school. One of the top performing schools in Jamaica, I'm very proud to say, was then, last century when I attended, and still is now. After high school, I spent a little time at the Enamani College for the Visual and Performing Arts, more part-time than full-time, but I must mention it because it was an important part of my studies, I think. Mm-hmm. And then I officially went to university at the Caribbean School of Architecture at University of Technology in Jamaica. After I finished my architecture degree, I worked for a little bit, and then I got a scholarship and I went back to England and did my master's at University College London. What other schools? I did a postgraduate certificate in Green Economy and Climate Change at TU Dresden, the Technical University in Dresden in Germany. So I think that's all the schools I've attended.
Okay, nice list there. And so what was your first job ever? Does it necessarily have to be after school?
Wow. My first job was as an entertainment coordinator at Boscobel Beach Hotel. And okay. That was a summer between high school and university. When I finished high school, I applied to both tourism management and architecture. I was of two minds of what I wanted to be when I grew up. Unlike now, where I'm just not sure what I want to be when I grow up. But then I had two minds. And so I was interested in tourism and I was also interested in architecture. So I took the opportunity to work that summer in tourism. And I worked at Boscobel Beach Hotel. It's on North Coast in Jamaica, it's in St. Mary. It's an all-inclusive hotel. It's part of the Sandals Group now. And it was lots and lots of fun. But at the end of that, I decided I wanted to go the architecture route. And so after that summer, I went to architecture. Most of my jobs since then have been related to architecture or construction.
Okay, I'm going to dig into that a lot more in a minute. But what is your current job or profession? How would you describe it?
Oh, gosh.
If you can give it in one...
My father used to call me the daughter with no clear profession because I really can't answer that question except with a long sentence. So I would say right now I'm a sustainability champion and a development champion. And I do that in different ways. So I guess if we go over my life, I've usually, most of the time, had an official job and such. But right now, it's not like that. It's very different and it's very fun. I have started my own company, as you mentioned, when you introduced me. And that company is about the promotion of sustainability. But it's really a project management company. I do construction project management, kind of strategic project management to help people to think about projects, where they want to go, what land they want to buy. I'm in real estate as well. And then how they build that project. I always try to bring a sustainability lens to everything I do. And so that's a big part of that as well. With Lucy, I'm also want to do some dedicated sustainability work across the Caribbean. So I'm actually working on a directory and a kind of a platform for Caribbean sustainable services across the Caribbean. And I hope to be launching that soon in another month or so. It's a little project I've been working on the side, but I think it's important that we build a community around sustainability in the Caribbean. So that's another one of the things I do. I'm also officially, as you said, a real estate consultant with NAI Jamaica, which is a part of NAI Global, which is one of the top five commercial real estate companies in the world. We focus very specifically on the commercial sector, so not on houses, but instead on retail, on offices, on hotels, resort facilities, farms, factories, warehouses. We work in that part of the real estate sector, not only in terms of buying and selling and leasing, but also in terms of advisory, making decisions, helping investors make good decisions. So that we do that as well.
Okay. So
I forgot another bit.
Shall I go on? Please do.
I also am an advisor to UN Women Multi-Country Office in Barbados, which I forgot to give you in my bio, which is not in my bio. So I'm a senior planning advisor to UN Women at the moment. UN Women has their offices in Barbados, but they work throughout the Caribbean, the English and Dutch speaking Caribbean. And with UN Women, I am working on some research and studies about building resilience, inclusivity, smart and safe elements into urban design, and in particular into public space. Public space is something that's long fascinated me. I've worked on a number of major public space projects here in Jamaica. I think public space is an important part of development in general, and I'm very grateful for that opportunity to do this little advisory project with UN Women as well.
Okay, great. So have you always done this much? Have you always been a person who does a lot?
It's funny because when I have a single job, like when I was at UDC, mm-hmm. I would say I did a lot in a similar way. UDC is a very multifaceted company. So in the same way that I'm doing advisory and transactions, and the same would be true for UDC. In fact, in UDC, it's even more, because there's a large element of HR. UDC had over 1,200 staff when I started, and managing 1,200 staff is a lot. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of love. It's to motivate 1,200 people is quite a task. UDC has multiple offices across the island, so it involves going around to offices, letting people see you, hearing from people what their concerns are, you know, just trying to keep all the elements of the business moving. It means being up and down a lot, and also not just focusing on work, because, you know, people bring their whole selves to work. So there is some space you need to make in there for understanding why people are or are not doing what should be happening, and how you keep them motivated. That, of course, is particularly hard during COVID, during lockdowns. Some of UDC subsidiary companies are essential services. So even though a lot of the country was in lockdown, quite a few of the UDC team were working as essential services. They do water supply, mm-hmm. as well as property management and facilities management for facilities that house essential services. So when the staff go to work, I got to go to work too. So, you know, a lot of people were home, but even through those times, we were out on the road quite a bit with the team, and of course, security. We have significant amount of security and like estate management and rangers and stuff like that as well.
Right. Management never stops.
Never. So yes, to answer your question about was I always this busy? Yes, even when I imagine myself taking a break between jobs, or even when I like to describe myself as unemployed, I am always busy. But I think it's more my nature than the job. Mm-hmm. I like to do and be and always be learning. Mm-hmm. If I'm not doing these things, I'm probably doing an online course or something. And if I can squeeze in one now, I will as well. You know, I like to keep the brain going.
Yeah, I see that. So clearly, you're a woman who wears many hats. What was your entry point into the built environment itself? So you mentioned your two minds before going to university. Take us that, about that.
That has actually been a matter that I've had to think about in some amount of detail, because the truth is I was interested in art. I did art in CXE. Mm-hmm. And I remember very clearly my father asked me, what do you plan to do with art? Because my father's very practical, and he was like, you know, you do these subjects and they lead you to this profession. So what exactly do you plan to do with art? I really had no answer for him when I was at CXE level. I was doing art and literature and stuff, and I was all in my mind as enjoying a cerebral experience in high school. And when I went to sixth form, I decided to do art again. And he was like, really and truly, what are you going to do with this? And that's when I started thinking seriously, what can one do with art, you know, professionally? Mm-hmm. And that's where I started to explore architecture. I will say, though, that even before that, I was always fascinated by the built environment, by buildings and things that were built, you know, how they were made, what they look like. There weren't as many like house and building shows on TV at the time, but it was certainly something that had an appeal to me back in my day. Last century, I would look it up in encyclopedias and stuff. We didn't have Google and TV shows, right. But it was something that had always interested me. And I will say that when I was in high school also, and I was thinking about what will I be when I grow up, I read this fantastic article about a lady named Gloria Knight. She was the head of the UDC. Mm-hmm. And when I was a teenager, I was about 16, I read this article about her, and back then the pictures in the newspapers were kind of grainy and not so hot. But I remember clearly she was a little lady in the picture, and there were all these men with her. And I was like, wow, look at that. Look what she's doing. And I remember reading about it, and I remember taking the article and showing my dad and said, look, see, there were men in construction. And so maybe if I do architecture, maybe one day I will, you know, do construction and do stuff like Gloria Knight. And, you know, some 30 odd years later, I sat down in Gloria Knight's seat.
Wow. Okay. So very interesting start there. So let's see, you started thinking of art and you got into architecture school with the goal of working in construction. Was it specific that you wanted to do
architecture? No, you know, okay. I got into architecture with the goal of continuing to do art in a more respectable way.
Oh.
I wanted to continue finding ways to paint and dream about things, but in a way that nobody would bother me and they would think I was on a path to something sensible, you know? And truly, I will say that in my architecture school, that is what I enjoyed. We did things like 2D, 3D design and things like we had this course, I think it was called Philosophy of Architecture or something, where we thought deeply about the meaning of space and place and time. And, you know, these were really like, this was really an excellent build on studying English literature and studying art, mm-hmm. but it really wasn't architecture to get into the business of designing buildings. I guess I am very grateful to how the course is structured because it honored that part of what I wanted to do,
right.
but it also took me through the technical stuff. And it is something I have found about architecture. Later in life, I actually taught design studio back at the Caribbean School of Architecture. I taught design studio for about 3 years. And in design studio, one of the things we discuss is how architecture is both art and science. And mm-hmm. so architecture accepts people from both sides. So you'll get deeply technical people who do things like building and engineering and technical design. And, you know, they do measurements and stuff. But architecture also takes very more artistic people who think about where is the wind blowing and where do the shadows fall. And, you know, I was very much more in that. But it helps to hone both those people's skills to the point of being a professional. When I finished architecture, I found I was interested in going at a different scale, which is when I moved into urban design and urban planning. And I think that is really what got me. So architecture is at this scale, the scale of a building and of a yard, and then urban starts going to a larger scale, you know, the scale of the community, the scale of the town, then what happens. And, you know, it might be a little bit of my desire to see the big picture. And I tell people that when I first went to school, project management wasn't a profession. Again, I keep dating myself with these comments, but when I went to high school and university, project management wasn't a profession. It wasn't something people did.
Right.
It was after I studied planning and I went to work at National Housing Trust that they essentially had a project management department. And what it was kind of a bringing together of professionals of different kinds in the construction industry to make things happen. Mm-hmm. And that's when I realized that this really was the job for me, because I'm a planner, I would say, not only by profession, but by personality. I like to think things through. I don't like surprises. I really, really dislike surprises. So I like to have things planned out. I like to know what's going to happen next weekend. I am a real planner, and planning is an important part of how I live my life, and also a part of, and I suppose a key part of why it became such a big element in my profession. Project management is a good deal of planning, but there are other things brought into it, some management and stuff. Mm-hmm. Also learned that project management and management are very aligned in being able to see all the aspects of getting something done. Some people who are project managers, even though they're the project manager, get caught up in the details. And that's the thing about project manager. You've got to think big. You got to think outside of each little detail to what is the project? Is it going to be achieved in time? Even if we achieve it in time, are we fulfilling what they expected, not just the specs? You know, so there's a kind of higher level strategic part in project management, which really appeals to my personality, I would say, And over the years, I've come to recognize that that is, I guess, my core skill. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm at a point where that's kind of what I'm doing primarily.
Okay, great. I love that. And I'm also a project manager, entry level, okay. Not nearly as much experience as you, but I'm very interested in everything you're saying because I can relate. But to take it back a little bit, once you first got out of your undergrad, what was the first job you got into and how did you get there?
My first job would have been, I guess, going to the National Housing Trust. So I studied planning at University College London and I came home and I had no idea where I'd work because I came home and I was like, okay, so what do people with my skill do exactly? Right. And I actually came home and I looked at UDC and I was like, I don't know if UDC is really what I want. It's kind of funny. More than once people have said to me, you know, are you going to go to UDC? And I was like, I don't know. It's not my kind of thing. And then one day I ended up being the head of UDC, but life is like that. But I went to National Housing Trust. I can't even really recall how I ended up there. I wrote an application. I was called in for an interview. I spoke about the kinds of philosophical planning things that I had done. They are far more involved in straight up construction project management. But they took a chance on me. And I would say I went through the rigors of what a lot of people in construction Jamaica do. I started working with sugar workers housing. I feel if you're not a real Jamaican construction worker unless you've worked in sugar workers housing. You know, it's like the baseline of doing development work in Jamaica. And so I got in sugar worker housing, real classic stuff. Had a little Jeep and would drive out to the country early in the morning and, you know, get to understand how the sugar estates work. To understand how the people think, live, want to live, and then get around to developing housing. And that was one of my first projects. And I'm very grateful for the time I spent at NHT. I think it's the longest job I've ever had. I stayed there for 6 years. And the joy of NHT was, I think, every year or two, they promoted me, gave me a new portfolio. I had new things to do. And I think that's very good for somebody like me because I've never hung around to really see if I get bored easily, but I definitely need new things happening, which is why project management is good because a project has a finite time. So at some point that ends and you start another one. Mm-hmm. And that I think is a critical part of how I work. I want to keep seeing new, interesting things and getting things done and moving on to the next thing and then getting that done. Right. And so that was really my experience at NHT. It was awesome. I had the opportunity to build Emancipation Park, which we just had last week. They gave me a little award to thank me 20 years later. So I can't believe that I was doing construction projects 20 years ago, but it's been 20 years since I built Emancipation Park. It is a delight to see the trees. I think, you know, the saying that says the best time to build a tree was 20, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. Yeah. Well, I went to the park and there were trees that I planted 20 years ago.
Wow.
And it's just awesome. They're huge and they're giving people shade and people are lying underneath them. And it's like, yeah, you really should have planted trees 20 years ago. It's awesome. And so that was my first job. Very, very fulfilling. I'm very grateful for it. And it opened doors for all the other varied things that I've done since.
Yeah. So there's so many different industries you can get into as a project manager in that field. So how have you then chosen your pursuits along the way? Or did they just kind of fall into your lap?
Well,
fall into your path, let's say.
Well, boy, I wouldn't say anything falls into my path. I kind of go searching for things,
okay,
and finding things I may not want. But back when I first did project management, and I did my PMP back in 2004, it was a year that Hurricane Ivan hit, because Ivan hit the day I had my PMP exam, and I had to put it off for 3 months. When I started the PMP process back in 2004, which sounds so far away now, it was really targeted more at IT professionals.
Yeah.
And it was the IT guys at NHT who were really doing PMP. And I was like, but hey, this is relevant to construction and construction project management. And they were kind of like, yeah, maybe. And I decided I was going to go for it. And I went and did the course and I went and did the exam and I got my PMP. And it back in those days, it was really still a lot of it was around IT. And so I tried to associate with other PMPs who were in construction project management to see how was this really applicable. But you see, not long after that, I moved to Trinidad. And in Trinidad, the PMP community was very much focused on oil and gas,
right,
which I really didn't expect that. And that was, again, another new view of how project management is really applicable to anything. But in those years, I found a deepened interest in construction and construction project management and focusing on construction project management. So even though I studied the core project management principles, how I worked and operated was really in construction project management. First at NHT, then I went to Trinidad, and it's just been layers and layers of construction, and then a whole layer of sustainability came in. And so that's been my kind of construction work, my project management work over the years.
Okay. I can see that this conversation is going to go back and forth a lot because there's so many nuggets that I want to get into. But so you mentioned the PMP at that point being more IT focused. I know you also have a Scrum Master certification, which even today I think is highly IT focused.
It is very IT.
So I'm interested to know what led you to deciding to do that and how you found it applicable.
The Scrum.
Yes.
So while I was at UDC, one of my team members came to me. He has a PMP. So there are quite a few PMP certified project managers at UDC. And one of them, I think he was in the group or whatever. Anyway, he came to me and he said, oh, I did this new thing called Scrum. Are you interested? So I was like, no, not really. Because I was feeling, hey, I'm big and senior. I've done this, 20 years into being a project manager, 18 years since I did my PMP. I know this, And he said, no, you might find Scrum interesting. It's very different from what we did in PMP. So I was like, I don't know. And then, of course, I was very busy. Then I met the lady who was teaching the course, and she was like, listen, it's just a weekend. You come into a weekend and you come all day Saturday, all day Sunday, and then you can do the exam. You can take your own time thereafter, but the core of the training is just these 2 full days. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, why not? So I went and did it. And in fact, he did it with me. You might know him. He's famous on Instagram and Twitter. His name is Rooster's World, but he really applies that in natural resources management. But this just goes to show you how project management can be applied anywhere. But Damien and I went and did this course over the weekend, and let me tell you, it blew my mind. I thought I knew everything. Mm-hmm. I was accustomed to working in construction project management. I had worked in construction management for years at that point. I was very fairly senior in construction project management. And the lady who taught the course, her name was Andrea. She really blew my mind because she just changed the framing of projects for me. And the most important thing that I left that weekend with was that the triple constraint, which I had always considered the most important thing, time, cost, quality. What she discussed was that what Agile looks at is that there is absolutely nothing more important than time. And what time is what makes the big decisions. Of course, this is particularly true in IT. And of course, a lot of the examples were IT and about doing IT apps and being able to do get out early editions and then build on it. Mm-hmm. And in fact, in the first day, I said to her, yo, this is frustrating because it's not applicable to construction.
Right.
Because construction works like this. You dig the hole, you pour the cement, there's no agile option. And she's like, no, you're not thinking about it right. And as the course went on, she really did change my thinking. And it's so important, even when you think you know it all, to expose yourself to things that may completely change your mind. Yeah. Because changing your mind might change how you see the world and how you do things. And so she spoke about time, and she's saying in getting out apps, it's so important, for example, as an app developer to be the first to market. Even if you don't have all the bells and whistles, even if it's not perfect, you're able to say to the public, here's my idea, you know, mm-hmm. test my idea and tell me what you think. And I really sat with it and thought about it. And I was like, you know, this is very applicable in project management, consortium project management, and with doing government projects. Because in government projects, we tend to, everything must be perfect and we get right down to the end. And then you have the opening ceremony, prime minister cuts the ribbon, right? And there's just nothing else. That's the only process. And I started thinking about it, started discussing it with UDC project management team, with UDC planning and design team, UDC rest of the management team. I'm like, you know, what if we can get out? What if this is what we can do? And we get out this, and, you know, and so we get a product to the, we get something in the hands of the people quickly, not like an app, but we deliver something. Mm-hmm. It may not be perfect, but it may be more important to deliver it than to have it perfect. And, you know, we thought about this with things like Harmony Park, which is the park we handed over in last year, about a year ago, more than a year ago. Mm-hmm. My second big park public space project I got to do. But it was a huge park, four times the size of Emancipation Park. It was in Montego Bay, which is 5 hours away from Kingston, where our office is. Mm-hmm. So added complexities to doing this project, of course. And then we had a pandemic and we had lockdowns, and we had delivery dates that we were planning for before COVID-19 started. Mm-hmm. And then we were like, you know, some people were like, lockdown the projects and it's not going to work. But then we got exemptions to allow some construction work to go ahead. And then we, you know, we started thinking, okay, let's take an agile approach to this. What can we deliver? You know, when we had no movement days and movement days in Jamaica. Mm-hmm. So we're like, on movement days, people are just dying to go outside. So it may be better for us to open the park. It's not perfect. All the trees aren't there. The beach may not be ready. But it may be better to allow people a space to go than to not have it and have it closed up and everybody's passing it and unable to use it at a time when people really need the relief of public space.
Right.
So we started determining how we could deliver this project, even in parts or in kind of section, in a sectional way. And we picked a date. PM said, yes, he'll come and open the park on that day. Then we had a spike in cases, lockdowns, didn't happen. So we're like, okay, we don't come again. What else can we do? I mean, and of course, you know, COVID disrupted everything about the processes, everything we wanted to order, everything we wanted to buy, mm-hmm. even being able to get the grass to plant and the trees, everything was complicated. And then we said, okay, we're going to wheel and come again. And we did, and we were able to open. And it wasn't perfect. And a lesson for me as well, because I often tend towards wanting things to be perfect. But it wasn't perfect. But it was good. It's what people needed right at that time. People mm-hmm. needed to be able to go out. So when it opened, people couldn't go on the beach. The beach was not available yet. Mm-hmm. There was some works to be finished on the beach licenses to be done and stuff. But people were able to enjoy the grounds and the park and the jogging trail and eat ice cream in the meantime, you know?
Right.
And so I think Scrum has made me reframe not only my work, but my life, you know, what is important. I remember she gave an example and she said, if your grandma got bitten by a poisonous spider and she only had 2 days to live and she's on the other side of the island, right? Mm-hmm. And you need a car to get there. And somebody says to you, hey, I can give you a Mercedes, but I have to get it cleaned. And so you won't be able to get it for a day and a half. So you can only get it in a day and a half's time. Or somebody else says to you, I can give you a old no-name car. I'm sorry, it has no AC and one of the seats isn't working, but you can have it right now. Which one are you going to take? Because when time is important, quality doesn't matter as much. So as much as I may like the Mercedes and I may want the luxury car, it doesn't matter. What I take to get to the other side of the island doesn't matter, because what's important is what I'm going to at the other side of the island, which is to kiss my grandmother before she dies.
Wow.
Understand?
That's
even dying wasn't a good example.
But that really hits home.
You know, she gave me the example that we often think that everything must be of a great quality to deliver it. And it is one of our hang-ups as project managers, as construction people, that you want to achieve a certain quality before you hand it up. But sometimes, give me the bare bones. It's urgent. I need to get going. You know, there's a pandemic. There are no other green spaces in this particular community. You're doing a huge green space. What are you going to do? Keep it boarded up or let people use it? Yeah, I think Scrum really an agile approach to how you do things, which is what's my early success? What can I do as quickly as possible? Mm-hmm. And in government in particular, but really in anything, there's a distinct advantage to giving something that you can use, enjoy, even while I build on a better thing to follow. But yeah, it's been an important lesson for me in how to do things.
Yeah. Have you seen, when you first started using that, did you get much pushback from your team, from others in this new way of doing things?
I like I said, I have to big up UDC's project management and other technical team. They actually, a lot of them had done the course before me. As I said, one of them was one who invited me to do it. Mm-hmm. So, I think generally quite an agile team themselves. However, it is a little difficult to change what is traditionally seen as how things are done, you know.
Right.
You hand over a complete and perfect thing on this day. And also, thankfully, we have a prime minister who is like, yeah, let's go. Better we do something than we do nothing, you know. Mm-hmm. Let's go.
Right. Okay.
So, I think it's more and more, I think people are appreciating that it's probably better to get something and build on it than wait for the perfect thing.
It's a hard lesson, but important.
It is. It is, especially when in your heart, you know, it could be better. There are little things you can tweak, but you can continue improving the product.
Right, right. It doesn't have to be over when it's over.
Continuous improvement. We did an ISO. The company went through an ISO certification process at the same time.
Okay.
And the base principle of ISO certification is continuous improvement. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're like, well, the main thing is, do you have it? Okay, you don't have it. Let's put in place a standard and start working towards it, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, we set milestones for where we can get, and it may not be perfect, but you got here, and continuous improvement is the name of the game. So.
All right. So in all of this, I think you talked a lot about kind of your maybe mid to later years in project management, but coming up, did you have any mentors that, you know, you were able to work with or show you the ropes?
I'm going to say it's difficult for women in construction. I think it is better now. I would like to think that I have encouraged, opened some doors, as many as I could, even though my hands are full and I was busy myself. Mm-hmm. But that just that there are more women and more regard for women, because I mean, I won't go into it, but I have had some extremely disrespectful treatment, treated as if I was, you know, the help, as opposed to being a project manager. I got, mm-hmm. I got a lot of that in my younger years. I even got it as a CEO, but these are things that you just keep working on. I would say, I think, I don't know if I use the word mentor, but my boss in Trinidad had such faith in me. It was a delight. When somebody believes in you, you really can excel. So he just thought I could do anything. And because he thought that, boy, I could do anything. I really, and I think I achieved things just because he was like, yeah, go, what else you want to do? You know, that was his view of everything. He's like, you know, what else can you do? You know, you want to go and try that, you know? And it was an awesome way to work.
Yeah.
To have somebody who was just like cheering you on, opening doors, finding ways to support you. I won't say I had that all my life. Very much the opposite many times. But yes, it is good when you have somebody support you. I would say that I currently have a mentor now who is also pretty amazing, constantly reminding me that I you know, I outsmart myself, that I second guess myself, and that I'm brighter than I recognize, and I'm smarter than I recognize, and I must just go do it, you know? And
yeah,
I really appreciate having people like that in my life, because sometimes no matter how good you are, you're like, can I do this? What am I doing? I'm not sure, you know? And sometimes you need somebody who's like, of course you can do this. Don't be silly, you know, just to remind you. And so, yeah, it makes a difference. I think I would have preferred to, I would have loved to have better, more structured mentorship, especially from maybe women who were in the profession, but actually there weren't that many to tell you the truth. I guess I'm grateful for where I've gotten to, and I would like to think that I look back and give a hand up, open a door, give a push to those who can get it, who need it as well.
Right. And so what would you say is maybe one of the biggest lessons that you've learned as a manager throughout your career?
As a manager?
Yeah.
Okay. I think the most important lesson I've learned as a manager is you can do absolutely nothing without the other people on your team. I think that's the most important thing that I learned in my time having a team of 1,200 people, is that I could make decisions, you know, I could discuss with the board, I could discuss with the permanent secretary, I could discuss with the prime minister, things we wanted to do, but the truth is none of those things were really going to happen unless those other 1,200 people got in step, you know, unless they were like, yeah, we're with you. And I think the most important lesson in management is no matter how bright you are, no matter how good the company is, the products are, whatever, those are the people who are going to really get the work done. I mean, my job as a CEO, as a head of entity, is to show up, encourage people, remove the roadblocks for them, make sure that the pay happens on time. You know, that's really my job as a head of entity, as a CEO, because the real work gets done by the workers, you know. And if you want to get things done and great things done, you have to make sure you understand the people who you're asking to do it. Make sure they're on board, anything they're uncomfortable with, they don't understand, they don't agree with, you know, that you take time and work through that.
Yeah.
And I really have to credit all of the achievements that I made, that were made during the period, to the team that I had. And I think managing people is probably one of the hardest things to do, but when you can do it well, that's what leads to really great success.
This might be a strange question to ask, but I'm curious, do you maybe remember what point, or could you point to a specific time where you switched from being that worker, because you had to start somewhere, to being the manager and handling people?
Boy. It's funny, and you're right, there comes a point where it is two different worlds, to be a worker and then to become a manager or a leader. And I think perhaps it happens in different ways over the years. Project management, I think, is a good, an excellent training ground for leadership. Because being a project manager, even if it's not the biggest project, your role is to bring all the elements of the project together, bring all the people in the project together with a singular vision, which is to achieve whatever is the requirement of that project. That is an important leadership lesson. So be it 3 people, 300 people, be it a big, huge thing that's worth $1 billion, or be it a small product, the point is that this team is together to produce this outcome. And being the project manager and doing that project management well, which is understanding your role is not to get lost in what each of those people are doing, but to make sure that they stay together, that you, just as I described, you remove any roadblocks for them, you facilitate whatever is needed to let them work and get that thing done. I think being a project manager was probably the best training I had for a leadership role. Because, you know, eventually I was leading a team of maybe, it was 90, about 90 people, because I was in charge of the technical division first and had a team of about 90, which is a fairly large team as it is.
Yeah.
And then just like that, I became the leader of a team of like 1200. But the thing is, the principles apply. So I suppose even at this point, if you gave me a team of 10,000, it's still the same principle, you know, Understand what each team person's supposed to be doing. Take some time to hear from them. How is it going? Is it going well? Do you have any roadblocks? Are there any concerns? Do you need additional resources? And then, you know, be clear on what the outcome is, be clear about timelines. And those are things, again, that you learn in project management. You know, what is the timeline? When is it expected? What kind of quality is expected? So you have the framework of what you're trying to do. You have the team, and it's a matter of managing resources. The rest, though, I think comes from just a good amount of respect for others and honoring the dignity of others so that everybody on the team plays a role. The person who makes the tea has an important role. If I come to work and I'm grumpy and sleepy and I haven't had any caffeine, today may not go well. You know, but somebody made me a cup of tea. It was just the way I loved it. And I got my caffeine in time. Uh-huh. And that was a part of making sure that the rest of the process went well, you know. So Every person's an important part of the team. Recognizing people for the work they do, honoring people for the work they do, is an important part of motivating a team to continue working. Uh-huh. And also celebrating the small wins.
So, right.
Again, with Agile, don't wait till the perfect thing. Each little release, have a small celebration.
Yeah.
Celebrate along the way.
Good. Okay. So this could probably be a whole separate conversation itself. But first I'll ask you, are there any difficulties that you've seen in the profession, kind of specific to Jamaica or to the Caribbean, since you've worked in different islands?
Which profession do you mean, since I have multiple in project management?
Actually, have you ever worked in straight up design with your background in architecture?
Yes, I did work in architecture for a while. And in fact, I guess full circle, I'm working on some straight design stuff these days as well, too.
Okay.
So I think as I mellow out, you know, I have a little more space to go back to that girl who used to imagine space and time and think about the poetics of place. Yeah, I'm back there.
Okay. But my question was to project management.
If I see any issues?
Yeah, any particular difficulties working in the Caribbean?
No, I think the Caribbean is doing quite well. What I'm seeing across the Caribbean is a lot of active go-getter folks. I think the ability to use things like Zoom and LinkedIn and stuff just removes those barriers between you and almost anybody. You can reach out to almost anybody now, you know, and we're not shy people in general. So you'll see particularly Jamaicans, not shy people. So you'll see people involved in all kinds of things that you may not have ever thought of. You know, I saw the Grenadian minister was appointed head of the Climate Change Commission today. And that's like just awesome to me. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
it's a big world. And the guy from Grenada is ahead. Isn't that way cool? You know, I think that these are times where the ability to grab opportunities are even more open and ready. Mm-hmm. And fortune favors the brave, so go brave. So I find my Caribbean brothers and sisters quite brave. So I see no
limitations.
I see no problem except our own limitations. We must keep going.
Right.
I do think that one thing I will say is Caribbean being grouped with Latin America often is an issue. There is some amount of restriction because of language. I do think that there is great value in learning Spanish. I speak Spanish. I went through the course. I am so not fluent at the moment, and I'm really going to revisit it because I think being fluent opens some additional doors for Caribbean people.
That's a good point.
A lot of people cuss, and it's worth cussing, you know, that things that happen and have Latin America and the Caribbean grouped kind of happen in Spanish, spoken as Spanish speakers. We could complain or we could learn the language. My recommendation is we learn the language.
Yeah.
This recommendation is applied to me as well.
Reminder. Okay, so we're going to wrap up soon, but I do want to know what led you, I don't think we really got to that in the conversation, what led you really into going into green climate and sustainability, which is kind of where your focus is right now?
Okay. So back in, when I came back from Trinidad in 2008, I came to Jamaica, and I was the chief technical director in the Ministry of Water and Housing. Now, prior to that, I had spent, 6-8 years of my professional career up to that point had been very much around housing. So I felt comfortable with housing. I knew housing. I understand housing from a philosophical point of view, from a legislative point of view, from a construction point of view. I felt like I understood it. But, you know, governments do these, I won't call them random, but curious sometimes, pairings in assigning portfolios, and government of Jamaica at that time had a portfolio called water and housing. Interesting combination of things. I was obviously appointed because of my experience in housing, but truthfully, I did not know that much about water.
Right.
So I dedicated time at the start of that assignment to understanding the water sector, to understanding the business, again, everything, the philosophy, you know, where does it come from? Jamaica is considered a land of wood and water. You know, what is the role of water in our lives, in our lifestyles and stuff? And I really gave water a lot of thought. And I spent a lot of time understanding the industry, understanding what was happening at the policy level, understanding what was happening in terms of investments and stuff. Water was like, I thought I was it with housing, but water took it up another level because it took me into infrastructure, things that were happening at a larger scale, less sexy, because houses are sexy, buildings are sexy, because you can go, you can see it, you can cut a ribbon, you can have a little ceremony. Mm-hmm. But water, you know, who's cutting a ribbon for big pipes put under the road, you know? But infrastructure is really what everything else gets built on. And if you really want to understand the built environment, it can't just be the stuff at the surface. You got to understand the whole thing. And so that was really an opening for me into understanding the larger elements of building. And remember, I was interested in planning at a larger scale, which means I also need to understand how the city works, what is the foundation at that larger scale as well. But what happened specifically during that period is Jamaica went through a terrible drought between 2008 and 2009. Oh. Really, really, really bad drought, to the point where we were without, there were waterlogged pasts for days on end. Our rivers were dry. We were even considering how to seed clouds. It was terrible.
Wow.
And I was the head of the water portfolio. So obviously this weighed heavily on me. And I got to hear about all of the catastrophic things that could happen if we ran out of water. And that for me was a turning point because it made me start thinking about how we build, how we do what we do, not just building, but how. And, you know, how would we survive without water? How do we do things in a more responsible way? And in fact, it led to me when I left that role, actually originally first went up to UA to just volunteer. Because I went to volunteer at the Institute for Sustainable Development because I just wanted to understand more about sustainable development. And volunteering ended up being about 5 years of different contracts work, but I got involved in energy, I got involved in sustainable communities, and just all the elements of sustainability. And that's what really changed my approach to the work that I had been doing before, which was building. So still build, I still do construction and stuff, but understanding how we live consciously. I use the term living consciously. And living consciously as an individual, as a family, as a country, as a globe, how do we do those things to just, you know, acknowledge, honor the earth that we've been given, not take away or do things today that prevent people of the future from being able to thrive as well. And, you know, just, they're simple principles, but enacting them and making them real is difficult. Mm-hmm. And so, I spent a bit of time looking at net zero energy buildings, sustainable planning in general. And like you said in the introduction, UDC is one of the government of Jamaica's main implementation agencies. People think of it often in terms of just building. And I brought to it, if there was one thing I would say I brought in my tenure, was how do we do all those things sustainably? And I was able to have a national stage on which to share that message, you know, to show people that we could plan and do and build and do these big transformative projects in the country and do them in a sustainable way and a responsible way. And so, yeah, it was a door that opened for me back in about 2009. And it has been a core part of everything I do since.
I love it. Well, it doesn't seem like you'll be stopping anytime soon. So my question for you would be, where do you see this career of yours going in the next 5 years or so?
I have no idea. I will tell you what I want ultimately is mm-hmm. to kind of formally and at a larger scale marry my sustainability work, bringing Caribbean sustainability together as I want to do. As I mentioned, I want to do with this kind of directory, job board, platform kind of thing, but go even further to just being, you know, really leading on how to live sustainably in the Caribbean. Caribbean, of course, being one of the most vulnerable regions mm-hmm. to the effects of climate change. And therefore, we should really be the stars of how you live sustainably. How do we adapt to our changing futures? It does not appear 1.5 will be achieved. We went through this whole campaign, 1.5 to stay alive. It does not appear that we will achieve 1.5. So, you know, what do we do? Throw up our hands or, you know, change our ways and do things differently and demand, raise our voices, which, as I said, I'm very proud of my Caribbean brothers and sisters. We're getting exceedingly good at really raising our voices and joining the global discourse because we're affected and, you know, we need to lead that change. And so that's really my intention, to bring all these varied parts of my life together into a single entity that is really driving how we do things sustainably in every way. Obviously, with me personally, always leaning towards construction and real estate development, mm-hmm. but generally, how do we promote that in the Caribbean in general?
Awesome. Well, the best of luck to you on that and to us, because it's really all of us.
It is.
But you're leading the charge, so thank you. And so I'll round this out by asking you, bringing it back to the careers and to the students and our listeners, what is some advice that you would have for a young student coming up who may be at the point where they're just confused and not sure what's the next step for them?
I would say, just take the next step. I am, a good 20-something years, 23 years into my career. And I can honestly tell you that I'm not sure what I'm going to be when I grow up. So every day is exciting. Every opportunity that comes my way is a possible new direction. And I just live in hope and expectation of awesome things happening and having a good time along and doing as much good as I can. Mm-hmm. And never turning down an opportunity. I read a quote, I think it was from Brian. He said, if somebody offers you an opportunity, take it and then figure it out. And that's a lot of how I look at life and how I would recommend anyone to do not be afraid. A lot of people are held back because they're afraid this might not work out. It might not, and they just start again. I've done things that didn't work out. You start again.
Yeah.
Guess what? I'm probably much, much older than most of those students. But I mean, because all along in my life, people have said to me, why would you make that change? Because you are so comfortable. So when I was at NHT, for example, for 6 years, I think most people stay at NHT their whole lives. Most people at NHT have been there 20 years and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I had a very senior position and I decided I was leaving. And when I was leaving, people were like, why would you leave NHT? You know, it's like almost a treasured job to get. And I was like, yeah, but I don't know what else is out there in the world. So I'm going to go look and see. So I went. And, you know, I had a good time. I made a lot of money doing some other things. And then I came back. And like when I was in the ministry and I was chief technical director, there are some people who work all their lives and they move up to the level of chief technical director. And I was, and very good experience. But I wanted to go try some other things, you know. Same with being head of UDC. I did it. I set some very specific goals for where I wanted to take the company and things we wanted to achieve in that time. And then we try something else. I mean, not saying that everyone needs to be like me, but don't be afraid. Go brave. Life passes whether or not you do anything with it. So do something with it every day.
Yeah. That's almost too perfect to not end on, but I have to ask the question now because you mentioned it. Can you describe a time or give us some feedback on a direction that you went and after the fact you're like, oh, maybe that was the wrong way to go?
You know, when people say either win or I learn. So there, I'm trying to think of something I tried that wasn't me. No, but in fact, maybe it's like going to do some projects that sometimes I do some projects and they're heavy on research and stuff. And it's a lot. I'm like, mm-hmm. Oh, why did I do so much research? Mm-hmm. But everything can teach you and everything builds you. And every skill you get is useful, from knowing a language, being able to play the piano, being able to play the steel pan, being able to talk to people, all those skills come together. There is no knowledge that is wasted. In fact, all knowledge is power. Everything builds you up to who you'll be.
Amen. Well, I'm glad I asked the question because that was another gem right there. Well, Heather, I won't take any more of your time, but thank you so much. I really appreciate this conversation. For me specifically, because I did say I'm a project manager as well, but I think it'll be very useful for the listeners as well.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for having me. And I hope it was useful.
Definitely. And to our viewers and listeners, thank you for joining us on today's Pathway.
Keep listening. We'll be right back after a short break. This season of Pathways is brought to you by Telesford Countertop and General Construction Services, your number one source for quartz and solid surface. Their services are not only limited to countertops, their team builds homes, cabinets, vanities, does 3D images, renovations, and quantity estimates. Telesford Countertop and General Construction Services' mission statement is pride and delivery upon customer satisfaction. Contact them today at 435-0133 to get started on your construction project.
Thanks so much for listening. We would absolutely appreciate your comments and feedback as we try to make this podcast more beneficial for you, our listeners and watchers. If you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, please take a minute to press the review button, let us know how we're doing, and let others know that this is something that's worth their time. We also love to see your comments and engagement on social media, so head over to the post and let us know what you think about this latest episode.